Howard Dully's mother died when he was little. His father remarried, and the stepmother seemed to focus all her dissatisfaction on Howard. The mischief he got up to seems pretty normal today. But Lou, the stepmother, wouldn't rest until she found Dr. Walter Freeman, the champion of the transorbital lobotomy. He performed his ice-pick lobotomy on Howard in 1960 when he was only 12. Howard says it more or less destroyed his life. Since he still couldn't please his stepmother, Howard grew to adulthood confined in mental hospitals. He also spent time in prison as he struggled for decades with alcoholism. Finally, in his 50s, Howard Dully set out to understand what had happened to him. He hooked up with David Isay, who helped him tell his story in a brilliant 1995 documentary for National Public Radio. Now, Howard has written a book with the same title. It's called My Lobotomy.
When we did the documentary for My Lobotomy, we went to the archives, Freeman's archives, and we got my file. And I got to read a lot of the indictment, that they called it, and a lot of the information that was transcribed.
It must have been amazing for you to see that file after all these years. What did it feel like when you saw that file?
God, I had a gamut of feelings. First, I guess I felt the weight lift off my shoulders because it verified that I wasn't the evil person that one would think I was. And I cried. I broke down. I was very sad that there was just a lot of lies in the file, and I couldn't believe that they were there when it would have been so easy to check them and verify.
My file has everything. A photo of me with the ice picks in my eyes, medical bills, but all I care about are the notes. Mrs. Dully called up to say that Howard has been unbelievably defiant with a savage look on his face. He turns the room's lights on when there's broad sunlight outside and strange. He hates to wash. Okay. October 26, 1960. Howard is rather evasive about talking about things that go on in the home. November 30th, my birthday. Mrs. Dully came in for a talk about Howard. Things have gotten much worse, and she can barely endure it. December 17th, 1960. $200 for surgery, so the whole thing was $200. Well, that's pretty cheap. And I was supposed to fight all this, huh? No way. 12-year-olds couldn't stand against all that. Just wasn't fair.
Did you have trouble in school or trouble with other kids or anything?
I had trouble in school. I got in trouble with other kids. If I did something wrong, I usually had a pal with me to help me out so we'd share the blame.
Yeah. And you said you could hardly ever do anything wrong without getting caught.
Yeah, some reason I wasn't good at doing bad things. I'd always get caught. I'd leave a banana peel behind, or they'd always find out, and I might as well just put my name on it and said I did it, you know.
But looking in the file, you look at that stuff and you say, why did that justify this medical procedure? They stuck an ice pick in and did a lobotomy, and you were 12 years old.
Yeah, in both eyes. It took about 10 minutes was all it took, and I was told I was going in for tests.
How did you change?
Well, I seem to have lost a lot of my drive, a lot of my ambition. It's hard to say exactly how you changed. You become more introverted, less outgoing. Hard to believe in some cases. Some people think I'm very outgoing.
Do you feel like you're a different person because of it?
Yeah, mentally you will. You lose your self-esteem, you know, because you get the Frankenstein syndrome, the idea someone scrambled your brain and you're not normal, so to speak, and therefore you're different.
So did you tell people after that you'd had it?
No, I did not. We never discussed it. We didn't discuss it at home. It was never a topic of anything, any conversation. My brother was even sent away while I was at the hospital having it done, so when I came home, it wouldn't shock him.
When you meet people now, can they tell that you've had this lobotomy?
No. Nobody knew at all until I brought it up. No one's ever known.
Now, you've been through all of this. You've interviewed people. You've looked into your own history. Do you see things going on today that seem to you to remind you of this craze for the lobotomy that went on all these years ago?
Yeah, but it's different today. Today they're using more chemicals, pills and things. I'm concerned that they're overdoing it, but the nice thing I think about pills is they can be stopped, whereas the lobotomy, once you did it, it was done. But, you know, I think we rush for a panacea, so to speak, to give someone to make everything better and so easy. It concerns me that we're on a slippery slope, so to speak, when we do that.
You've made some real strides in the last few years to get more control of your life. You've been able to do things, but you can't go back and undo what was done to you.
Correct.
You must be angry about that sometimes. In the portrait, in the Sound Portrait documentary, you actually confronted your father about it, and he wouldn't even talk about it, really.
Yeah. It's not, I had to get over the anger before I could even do the project. That was the difficult part, because being angry wouldn't have solved anything for me, and it would have done nothing but caused animosity. My father wouldn't have talked to me if we did it on a I'm going to nail you to the wall type of interview. It had to be in a situation where, you know, this is just for information and things like that. So, you know, not to judge him as whether he was a good father or not.
Yeah.
Wasn't my purpose then.
Okay, so we're here to talk about my transorbital lobotomy. So how did you find Dr. Freeman?
I didn't. She did. She took you.
My question would be naturally, why would you let it happen to me if that was the case?
I got manipulated, pure and simple. I was sold a bill of goods.
So why do you think it's been so hard for us to talk about this in your estimation?
Largely because you never asked about it. It was an unpleasant part of my life, and I don't particularly want to delve into it.
It's Although he refuses to take any responsibility, just sitting here with my dad and getting to ask him questions about my lobotomy is the happiest moment of my life.
Well, I want to thank you for doing this with me. I really do. I never thought that this would ever happen.
Well, you see, miracles occur.
Actually, what I wanted to do was tell you that I love you very
much. Well, whatever made you think I didn't know that?
You asked him if he was sorry about it.
Yes.
And you forgave him for doing this. Did that finish it for you? Is it over as far as you're concerned between the two of you?
Well, it has to be now. My father passed on a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
So it's kind of over there. But, you know, having a procedure like this, it's never really over. You have to live with it as long as you live.
Yeah. Did you ever get to talk to him any more about it?
Oh, several times we discussed it. He would jokingly say that we gave him a copy of the book, naturally. My new stepmom, read it twice. And my dad said that he read a little bit of it and was going to finish it someday, you know. But somehow I can't imagine that he didn't go from page to page through it. I mean, yeah. I know I would.
Yeah. And Lou, the stepmom who worked with Dr. Freeman to have this happen, she's gone now, too.
Yeah, she passed away in 2000, January 1st, as a matter of fact.
What's your life like now?
I'm back to training school bus drivers and in between interviews and book signings and things like that. I'm doing pretty good. I'm, you know, content with it. I knew that someday if I was capable of doing something like this, it's what I wanted to do.
Do you ever see your brothers? Or?
I've seen all my brothers except one. We don't really talk about it, but, you know, it's a little more open than it was.
It has to have been hard in some ways on them, too. I mean, they weren't told about it. This was not something anybody ever talked about much.
Yeah, and especially some of them felt that it was partly their fault that this had happened, and they didn't realize that there really wasn't anything they could do.
You don't blame them?
No, not at all.
But
not at all.
Do you still blame your stepmom?
Well, as much as I blame myself and my father, yeah. Am I brooding over it? No.
You said you don't blame your brothers any more than you blame yourself. Why do you blame yourself for this?
Well, because I charged headlong into it and helped instigate. I wasn't an angel in the whole thing.
You mean your behavior as a boy was yeah, rowdy?
Rowdy, and I knew how to push my stepmom's buttons, you know.
You knew how to make her angry?
Oh, yeah. Like any other kid could with their parents, believe me.
You must have, I suppose, in some ways been able to push those buttons pretty good.
Apparently. I just didn't know this would have been the result.
Did you ever think that it might be a good idea to just forget about all this, not talk about it?
Yeah, I did for many years, until I was in my 50s, and then I decided that, you know what, enough is enough. I have to get it out. If it's going to affect me inside for this many years, I have to do something.
Well, telling this story has to be an inspiration for some people who had the same fear of getting it out that you did. That must make you feel pretty good.
Yeah, I've received a lot of letters from people that have had experiences, not necessarily like mine, because not a lot of people have had lobotomies are still around, but other issues in the family, and to be able to share with them that you can live through it and still come out okay is a good feeling.
Howard Dully is the author of a memoir called My Lobotomy. Our thanks to David Isay for the excerpts from his documentary of the same name.